Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s, with your hosts, Adam Emmert.
I'm so happy for the rain that the rain is better at life than Skip Bayless. Thank you, rain.
And Brandon Schultz.
They play the music too loud. It's like you can't even talk to the person next to you.
Go Hawks.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, member of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, as always, my good buddy Adam Emmert.
We made it back together for this pod through all the technical difficulties, man.
It's been a little bit of a rough week with schedules, technical difficulties, but it's Blue Friday and everything works out great on Blue Friday. So it's time to talk about the Seahawks and the Packers coming up on Sunday night, Adam.
That's a good point. Yes, and it is the Sunday night game, the primetime matchup. All of America will be watching. Now, this will be one of those primetime games where we are on the road, which hasn't happened a ton the last season or so. We tend to play at home a lot on that. So, be an interesting matchup. I've had some mixed feelings about it going into this week, but we'll get into all that.
I do want to get into this, Adam, because one of the things that I think people are getting a little bit down about going into this Packers matchup because, you know, I think you mentioned it in the last show that you feel like luck is running out against the Packers. The Seahawks, right, under Pete Carroll, 3-0 against the Packers. And when you're going up against a team like that, that's as good as the Packers have been over the last 3 years, you don't maybe necessarily expect to win that many games. And when you saw what happened in the NFC Championship game last year, where it really looked like they had our number, and then the Seahawks have a miraculous comeback in the final minutes, it feels like it's getting close to our luck running out.
Well, and it's not just the NFC Championship game. I mean, it's Golden Tate's catch in the end zone with the replacement refs, and
it was a catch. I don't know why luck was involved with that. That was a catch.
Well, no, just the idea that you won it at the last second. Yeah. I mean, not the fact that the catch was lucky. The catch wasn't lucky. The catch was a catch. But the idea is that how many times can you pull that rabbit out of your hat?
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's just that law of averages, right? And then also it's that mystique of Lambeau Field. You know, you're going up there to the frozen tundra, although it's not so frozen this time of year. But Aaron Rodgers hasn't thrown a pick in Lambeau for over a season now.
And yeah, they're undefeated there last season.
Right, and it's a strong home field advantage. So, and then also just knowing how much harder it is just to go on the road, no matter where you are. For example, just last week going into St. Louis, we are a better team than St. Louis. We are, and the only thing is that being on the road is difficult, and that's a difficult environment for us to play in.
And the Seahawks,
much like, yeah, I think Lambeau could be.
The Seahawks have bad road luck in St. Louis for sure. There's something about that place.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that's what evens out for us, is that we have terrible luck in St. Louis, and so we've got good luck against the Packers. Maybe that's where it all evens out.
Well, and part of where it evens out, too, you talk about how Green Bay, as good as they are at home, the Seahawks in primetime games just happen to have a really good record. They've only lost, if you include playoffs, and let's throw playoffs out of there. Let's just do regular season. They've only lost one regular season game in a primetime game under Pete Carroll.
That's exactly right, and that's an amazing record right there. So there's a streak for you. The Hawks obviously get geeked up for the big games. They always rise to that occasion. It seems like they'll play to the level of their opponent a little bit, and I think that's something that happens all over the NFL. But you know, the other thing that you think about when you're just thinking about it and you're not feeling great about this matchup right at first blush is the idea, sure, the luck thing. Then secondly, just the idea that Aaron Rodgers has to be just livid over the fact that he's had to deal with Russell Wilson beating him time after time after time. And you talk about there's certain times when athletes just come out and have FU games.
Right.
This feels like this could be an Aaron Rodgers FU game. He's fully healthy. We saw him move around pretty well against the Bears. I mean, he's running like he did before the calf injury. So he looks good. He was sharp throwing the football. They've decided to take James Jones out of purgatory and bring him back and put him in a real live offense. And so there's things like that that kind of creep up in your mind. So Aaron Rodgers' nephew game, it's bad luck. It's Lambeau Field. It's like all these things. But then you sit down and you really look up at the matchups. And that's when I start going, oh, maybe the real football side of this is the side that makes more sense rather than just these storylines. Like when you start looking at the actual matchups, for example, Green Bay's run defense and historically how they've been against the Hawks, I really like the way that sounds when I start looking at those numbers. And it sounds like you may have some on tap. I've got a few too here, Brandon.
Yeah, and I do want to get into some of these matchup type issues. And I want to let folks know too, we have an actual Packers fan that's coming on the show today from the Packers Fan Podcast.
Yes.
Troy Heinrichs is going to join us. And he's going to kind of break down the matchup from a Packers fan perspective as well. So why don't we start off with the Seahawks offense against that Green Bay defense, because you mentioned run defense, Adam. Let's talk about that first.
Yeah, so Packers run defense, they gave up something like 180 odd some yards to the Bears last week on the ground.
Yeah,
was it 189?
It's crazy.
Something like that.
It was a lot.
It was a lot. And it wasn't just Matt Forte, who's a good back. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Matt Forte is a good back. But Jay Cutler was running around out there too a little bit, which was surprising. I know he's athletic, but I haven't seen him run quite as often as he did in that game.
He was running the read option with the Bears offense against the Packers.
Right. And we all know Russell Wilson's 10 times as dangerous as Jay Cutler when it comes to that sort of thing. So I feel like that bodes well for the Seahawks. Plus, the last two games the Seahawks have played the Packers, they've given up 190 yards on the ground to us plus. And I think that's a huge deal. Now, when you talk about Seahawks football, it's run the ball, play great defense. Now, obviously, the defense didn't play great last game, but let's start with the run game. That's where it all starts. And the one way to keep Aaron Rodgers from having an FU game and come out and tattooing you for 45 points is to keep him off the field. And if you can run the ball, boy, you're going to have a lot of success there. And really, against the Bears, one thing I noticed with what the Bears did on the ground was they had a lot of success to the left-hand side of the line, running at Green Bay's right side of their defensive front. And so I look for the Hawks to kind of run that direction. Plus, that's the side that they like to run to a little more, in my opinion, just kind of looking at the way that they play ball.
And I think that's going to be key, because I look back, Adam, at the NFC Championship game and the amount of time that they actually used Marshawn Lynch. Now, turnovers really hampered what they could do in the first half, because they were throwing the ball around and it was bouncing off Jermaine Kearse's fingertips and going into the hands of Packers defenders. But Marshawn Lynch really didn't. It wasn't a focused effort of the Seahawks offense to get Marshawn Lynch the ball in the first half, apart from one drive where they actually moved the ball really well in that NFC Championship game. But still, I think going back and looking at that first half, it was something like 8 carries for 30 some yards. It wasn't he wasn't featured as much as he was in the second half when they really started to turn it on. And to me, that's going to be the key for the Seahawks this week, is can they get the ball to Marshawn Lynch early and really hammer the ball with Marshawn early, get the defense tired, hold on to the ball for a long time, and make that a focus of how they're going to run their offense against the Packers.
Well, it's a huge thing. You saw Russell Wilson throw the ball 40 times last game.
Yeah.
And Marshawn goes for 18 carries. That's a balance that we can't have. Now, with that said, I think the little bit of the criticism that has come Daryl Bevel's way on that balance from the last game isn't quite warranted.
Mom?
Well, yeah. I mean, Beast Mama needs to just chill out a little bit. But the idea is that when you're down, like we were in the fourth quarter, and came back and scored 18 unanswered points to go ahead in the game, puts you in a position where you have to throw the ball more, just being down. So that's something that I don't know, it was exactly Daryl Bevel's fault. I think that was more game situation. So hopefully what the Hawks do is they come out. And like you said, you run Marshawn early and often, because we've all seen it. When you run Marshawn early and you run him often, by the time late in the third quarter, early fourth quarter runs around, nobody wants to tackle him anymore. It's just no fun. And nobody wants to do it anymore. And I think maybe that's what Beast Mama was trying to get at there a little bit. But, you know, I thought that was funny, because Marshawn's mom coming out and spouting off about the play calling and how Daryl Bevel's the worst play caller ever or whatever along those lines.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of funny. But do you think that's the first time Daryl Bevel's had to deal with a parent complaining about his play calling?
No, I'm sure probably not, because
no.
You don't see... I'm guessing most parents aren't as vocal about certain things, doesn't make it out into the public as much as maybe mm-hmm. a Facebook post from a parent might. I bet most parents of football players try not to post things publicly because they know it'll get out. And I'm sure she had to know that was going to get out and become a big deal. But in her position too, and I think Pete Carroll responded to it perfectly, you know, that's just a mom looking out for a kid.
Of course. Of course. And really the media latches onto that too, because how much do we get from Beast?
Yeah.
We just don't get much from Marshawn. So when anything comes out of his camp at all, it makes news. And especially if it's his mom, in a lot of ways, it's like one of the worst things that can happen to you as an adult man is for your mama to come out and start picking fights for you. You know, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. You don't need that. I'm quite sure somebody said something to him in the locker room about that. I mean, you have to.
Oh, he's got to be taking a hard time from if the guys in the locker room aren't giving him a hard time about it, then
they're failing.
There's something wrong with them.
Yeah, exactly. You're failing at that point. I mean, if one of our mothers came out and said something, or Jared's mom came out and said something about the pod and who gets enough talk time or whatever, oh man, that'd never end.
No.
That'd never end.
No.
That would be countless jokes right there. So,
the other thing, you know, and talking with Troy Heinrichs coming up, one of the things I talked to him about is how the Packers really handle tight ends, and his answer was not very well. And so if you saw it this last week against the Bears with Martellus Bennett, they went to him quite often. And so if those two guys in the first half, if Marshawn Lynch isn't running the ball and they aren't passing to Graham, then I think the Seahawks are going to have problems in the first half.
They could now. The Packers offense, it not as scary as it would be with Jordy Nelson. Obviously, Jordy Nelson being out is huge. The big news that came out today is Brian Bulaga strains his MCL in practice and is out for the game. Their right tackle, mm-hmm. or their right guard. Right tackle. Okay, I'm sorry. Right tackle. So that's a huge blow for them on the offensive line. Bulaga's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the Seahawks pass rush, it's been on fire throughout the preseason. It looked pretty good in the St. Louis game. They can get pressure almost any time they want with that front four. And can you imagine Michael Bennett or Cliff Averill lining up on top of one of their backups? And McCarthy hasn't named a starter yet, so we don't know who it's going to be. But I think that's a huge matchup benefit for the Seahawks right there in the trenches. And really, I mean, how many times have I said it? Games are won in the trenches. And I know that's a cliche, but really, it's a big deal to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage.
Well, and you talk about where and how things are won and lost on the offensive line and defensive line. You talk about being able to get pressure with front four. That's going to be really important, because you saw in this last game, when the Seahawks did blitz, they were getting beat by the Rams when they blitzed, apart from the touchdown that they scored. Most of Nick Foles' passing yards, or Nick Foles had a higher passer rating when the Seahawks brought extra pressure when they blitzed than they did. His passer rating was much lower when they didn't blitz. And mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers is much the same way. If you put pressure on Rodgers, he's going to find a way to beat you. He's really, really good at those particular things. Mm-hmm. And like Tom Brady, in the sense, those elite quarterbacks, when you put pressure on them, they find a way to beat you. They know where they need to go and make quick decisions and make the right reads. So to me, getting pressure with the front four is going to be really important, because if it's going to take more than that, then I think you're playing at a deficit on defense.
Well, and traditionally, the Hawks have gotten pretty decent pressure on Aaron Rodgers with their front four over the last couple years. And that's even with maybe lesser talent on the D-line than we have now as far as the pass rush goes even. So I feel pretty good about that matchup, D-line on their offensive line. It's not full of world beaters. Now, one matchup that is interesting, we talk about slot receiver a lot, but Randall Cobb is a heck of a receiver, clearly better than Julian Edelman.
Sure.
So just make sure Jared hears that. I just want to make sure he remembers that. For those of you who don't know, we had a big joke last year that we had an argument about who is better, Randall Cobb or Julian Edelman, and looked up the stats, and they were one reception apart.
Yeah. I do remember that now.
Yeah. And on the players' top 100 list this year, they were like three places apart on the top 100. So it was pretty funny. But Randall Cobb really is a great player. And it'll be interesting to see. It sounds like Thurl Simon still hasn't participated in practice.
So
it doesn't sound like he's going to play. That'd be my guess. Be shed again. That makes me a little nervous there. Maybe they take it and put Richard Sherman inside and act like they did in the last game, move him around to try to eliminate that. So that'd be one thing I'm looking for.
That's my theory. I feel that maybe it wasn't just for the Rams game, that it was a little bit of practice because one of the things that came out after the game is that Richard Sherman said he got a text on Monday before the game saying that they wanted him to play in that nickel role in the against the slot receiver. And that's not a whole lot of time. But they're professionals. Richard Sherman's a smart guy. He can figure it out. But I do think that it is kind of preparation for having Randall Cobb in that slot position and being able for Richard Sherman to cover him in those nickel situations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now that's one of those things, too. Moving Sherman around makes it a little harder for Aaron Rodgers just to avoid Sherman altogether.
Sure.
Like he tried to do in one game, and then he tried to test him in the NFC Championship game and got picked off. So that's a guy he does not like to throw against. So it'll be interesting to see if he goes at Sherman a little bit there. Now, in the last game, what we saw with the Rams, I think the Seahawks forgot completely that tight ends were eligible receivers that can go out in the routes and then catch the ball. So I'm hoping that they make an adjustment there. Now, I do believe that Cook and Kendricks are a little bit better than Rodgers and Corliss, the two tight ends for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, Corliss didn't even have a catch last week. Richard Rodgers goes three for three catches for about 27 yards.
Right. But so the idea is that you can't be giving up those 20-yard-plus plays, the chunk plays that they gave up eight of them last game. And if you can keep a team so they have to go out there and sustain drives, 10, 12, 13 plays, that makes it a lot harder rather than running a three-play drive, scoring a touchdown, and then getting off the field. And that's something traditionally the Hawks have done. They make you earn it, go all the way down the field, and then force you into making a mistake. Because just, obviously the more times that you run a play, the more apt you are to make a mistake because it's just more opportunities.
Sure.
So that's something that I'm hopeful for, to see if they can get the pressure at the front four so that they can help the linebackers in coverage a little bit. And I don't know that was all on Deion Bailey either. Like a lot of people trying to say that was all just because Cam was gone and he wasn't there covering.
A couple people have gone back and watched the game and really said outside of two plays in particular for Deion Bailey, he had a pretty good game for it being his first time as a starter.
Sure.
And whether or not that contributed to the communication issues that they're having on defense that it sounded like, I don't know if that was necessarily part of it or if it had to do more with the linebackers and communication there. But they do recognize that they have an issue there. And you hear from every one of those guys in their press conferences this week, we know what we did, and this is fixable, and we're going to fix it.
I believe that, too. You've seen the Hawks in the past have a bad game here, a bad game there, and issues get fixed, especially the tackling. The tackling is something that always gets cleaned up and is a lot better. Now, one thing that I found interesting about the Packers against Chicago this last week, Chicago dominated total plays in the game, 71 to 53. They had more total yards, 402 to 322. They were great on third down, 11 of 17. They were great on fourth down, 2 of 3. Yet, somehow, and they won time of possession, too, with all of that as well. So, as far as offensive numbers, they were really dominating the ball. And this is an offense that I don't think any of us thinks is a great offense in the Chicago Bears, and they're able to take advantage of that Green Bay Packer defense. Now, where it all came down to was They lost turnover battle 1-0. That game with the Packers was close. It was within 7 points with just a few minutes left in the game. It's not like the Bears were out of the game.
No, it was that last drive where they were going down the field that Jay Cutler threw the interception to kind of seal the win for the Packers.
Right, and that goes back to being all about the ball. And we saw in the last game, Hawks dominated turnovers, like we do in most games, and somehow lost. So I would look to that to be something that is an important factor in the game. The other thing is, it's just red zone. Where the Packers really came out on top against the Bears were 1-for-3 in the red zone, and Packers were 4-of-5 in the red zone. So the Packers may have given up a lot of yards in all that stuff, but it was that bend but don't break situation where you're kicking field goals instead of scoring touchdowns. And when the Packers had the opportunity, they punched it in. So it was red zone and one turnover, and that was the difference in the game. And really where we saw the Hawks struggle last week was third down efficiency and red zone. And like I said before, I think those are the last things to kind of come around when you're trying to get sharp on offense. But I would look for an improved effort in the red zone. And I don't know that that's just chucking it up to Jimmy Graham more. I don't think that's exactly the answer. I think they targeted him enough just fine. I think it's maybe just running the ball a little bit more. And given Russell Wilson a lot more run-pass options in the red zone, I think would be good. It seems like we go away from that when we get down in the red zone.
Right. And when I talk about Jimmy Graham, I wonder if, because talking to Troy, it sounds like the issue that the Packers have is leaving that middle wide open, which is a place that Russell Wilson doesn't really like to throw to tight ends, running backs, those little dump-off passes. You don't see him go to the middle of the field.
Yeah, not short middle, no.
No, and that's why I wonder if that's going to be a place where they try and exploit against the Packers, or if that's just a weakness of Russell Wilson's that you're just not going to see him throw to that area with that kind of short passing game.
Well, a lot's going to depend on the line play. I mean, we look at the rankings for the offensive line through week one, and Seahawks are pretty much dead last in both pass and run blocking.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think the Baltimore Ravens pass blocking was a little bit worse than the Seahawks, but yeah, you don't want to be in the bottom two.
No, that's just the whole thing. I mean, if you're in the bottom two, you're bad. And I look at that Packers defensive front, and Julius Peppers looked good again. He really did. I don't know if he found the fountain of youth or like if he's out there with Indiana Jones and found
good.
The Holy Grail, but he looked good. He looked good. And so that's one guy that you have to be prepared for. And he'll be lined up over top of Gilliam, and then Clay Matthews is your other. But these guys aren't the Rams in the front four.
No.
They really aren't, and they run a 3-4 anyway. So, but yeah, it's gonna be a little bit easier go for that offensive line just because of the matchup standpoints. Just not having Aaron Donald in the middle is gonna make a big difference. And yeah, they have B.J. Raji, but he was a great player what 2-3 years ago. Right now, I think he's a league average player,
sure,
a replacement level player, and that's somebody that we can move the ball on.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to call him league average. He's not a world beater or, you know, elite guy like Aaron Donald. So that they do get a bit of a reprieve. It's still a tough defensive line. I mean, nobody's going to be as good as the Rams this year. So,
no.
Unless they're the Texans or the Bills or the Jets, you know, those are kind of those elite defensive lines. And yes, I'm happy to see that. I guess the guy that I'm worried about on the Packers, and based off of the linebacker play from last week and the tackling from last week, is Eddie Lacy. Because if there's one guy that seems harder to tackle in the league than Marshawn Lynch, it's Eddie Lacy.
I don't know that he's harder to tackle than Marshawn. I wouldn't go that far at all. Eddie Lacy's lumbering.
I didn't say harder. I said if there's one guy that could be harder.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he's up there. I mean, he's a load to bring down. Problem was that the Bears weren't getting a hand on him until he was 2-3 yards down the field.
Yeah.
And they can't have that. They just can't have that. And I think the Hawks played the run fairly well last week. I know the Rams had a fair amount of yards on the ground.
They really didn't. I think Benny Cunningham did. I don't think he even broke 50 yards. But
no.
Lacy is quite a bit better than Benny Cunningham.
Yeah, he is. Rams 76 yards on the ground last week.
Okay.
But this is an Aaron Rodgers team, so Eddie Lacy's not the focus of their offense. So I look for the Hawks to have pretty good, and they've traditionally had good success shutting down Eddie Lacy. That's not the type of back that they have problems with. The type of back that they generally have problems with are like the Danny Woodheads of the world.
Sure.
Those little shifty quick dudes that get out in the flat and they throw a bunch of those stupid wheel routes to the guys in the flat. And you know, the Packers used the wheel route to great success against the Bears in this last game as well, down in the red zone. They definitely run that route. So that's something that the Hawks are going to have to be prepared for.
Sure. Well, unless you got anything else, Adam, what do you say we get onto the conversation with Troy Heinrichs of the Packers Fan Podcast?
No, the only other thing I have to say, screw the Packers, man. It's time for us to win this game. Like, I'm tired of it. I've been hearing it from Packer fan all week about how they're all revved up for this game, blah, 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 blah. I'm ready for a smackdown, man. I'm ready for a smackdown.
Oh, you know Packers fans are hyped up for this game, especially now that Seattle has to go to Green Bay instead of the...
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like how we complained about having to go to Carolina for every single game, and then finally mm-hmm. Carolina comes to Seattle, and you know Seattle just smacks them down. It's not even close anymore. Now,
right.
We hope that doesn't... that's not how it works out for Seattle going to Green Bay. The last
right.
time Seattle went to Green Bay, it didn't work out so well, but that was in the post-Mike Holmgren pre... Pete Carroll era. So
exactly, you know, there was one more topic I wanted to cover, and I just remembered it. It's the idea of how you start out your season mm-hmm. and your odds of making the playoffs from that point forward. And the idea is going 0-2 is not a good deal statistically. And that is something that we're really going to need to avoid. I'm pulling up the stats right now as we go here. But I believe if you go 0-1, it's something like you have a 25% chance to get to the playoffs. And if you go 0-2, it's somewhere around 10%. I'm pulling this up right now. Let's see if we can find it. But
you know what I'm curious about, though, is if they break that down road versus home games. Because if you start out 0-2 and those first two games are home games, then yeah, I would agree that's really bad. But if you go 0-1 based off of going on the road, or 0-2 based off of going, most teams don't have two road games to start off the season either. So if you go 0-2, it just means that the Seahawks are going to have to go 14-2 and win the division that way, and get home field and just make it work, right?
Yeah, that is true. And I think that you make a great point with the idea that it is road games. And so it's one of those things, if we do end up 0-2, it is certainly not time to panic by any stretch of the imagination. It hadn't played at the idea is you win all your home games, you go 500 on the road, and you go from there, right?
Right.
Like, that's a successful season. So losing your first two on the road would not be the end of the world. But to put it in perspective, only four teams have lost their first two games of the season and still wound up playing in the Super Bowl.
Well, that's four teams.
That's four teams. I'm just saying the odds get a little tighter. But again, it's not the Seahawks, so there's that.
Exactly. I don't even know why you're worried about those. That's history, Adam. That has no.
Yeah, history never. History never points towards the future, man.
Right.
Like it never. It's never a predictor of things that can happen in the future. That's for sure.
No,
it never repeats itself. It never does. Always original, that history.
Always original. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. All right. That was it.
Well, thanks for bringing us down right as we go into this interview with Troy and Heinrichs, Adam.
I just wanted everybody to know the stakes, man. This is a high-stakes game.
But the thing I really want to point out, by no means is it, guaranteed to go 0-2. It's going to be a tough game, yes. But one thing that you can be happy about is the fact that the Seahawks are good in primetime games. They've been really good against this Packers team. Go back to the opening day of last season, and it was a 20-point win. I mean, there was no point in that game where you really had that much of a question.
Right.
But it is different. It's Lambeau, and I think this is going to be a close game. I think it's going to come down final possession type game, just like it was against the Rams, and you hope that the Seahawks can pull it out this time.
Absolutely. All you can ask is to be in the game at the end of it when it's close and have a chance to win. And that's NFL football right there, because the margin for error is tight.
All right. Well, to get the perspective of a Packers fan, we have co-host of the Packers Fan Podcast, Troy Heinrichs, joining us. How's it going, Troy?
Awesome. Brandon, how are you guys doing out there?
We are doing well. We're getting ready for this upcoming game, the Seahawks against the Packers. It's, you know, the thing is, Troy, is I know talking to Adam, he gets the sense that the Seahawks' luck may have run out, especially in that last championship game, with Green Bay having faced these pretty difficult endings for the Packers in at least two of the last three games. Does this feel like a revenge game?
You could say it's a revenge game. I think at the end of the day, the Packers knew that it was one mistake. You know, that onside kick, Brandon Bostic, they took care of him, and then Minnesota took care of him again later, cutting him during the preseason. You know, he catches that ball, game's over, right? So for, you know, whatever you want to call it,
or 50
minutes of that 60-minute contest, you know, we had your number. So I wouldn't call it a revenge game. I think it's more of a, you know, prove to ourselves that we are as good as we thought we were. And having such a rough go of it in that first half against Chicago last week, I think this is going to be the game where it's going to either say, yep, we are who we think we are, and it is Super Bowl or bust, or, oh my gosh, we really aren't who we thought we were, and we got some problems to address.
So how do you think the Packers are approaching this going into this game? Because like you said, the Packers really did have the Seahawks figured out for most of that game. Looking back at that game, the Seahawks wide receivers were just, they were blanketed the entire game. Russell Wilson had nowhere to throw the ball. Even if he had time in that game to throw, but there was nowhere to throw it. How have things changed in the offseason for the Packers? Are things in the secondary, has anything really changed?
Well, I think the key is that front three in our 3-4 scheme, that's been a little bit of a hodgepodge here through the preseason and even in this first game, because we have LaTroy. He's going to be out for another 2 weeks, but Dayton Jones is coming back from suspension finally. And the key with that coverage of the secondary is still reliant on a good pass rush. And I think what we're still trying to figure out is, how do we get that good pass rush? How do we close those running lanes with the middle linebackers and outside linebackers? And the linebacking situation, I think, is where we're struggling right now, because of the fact that Sam Barrington went down with that season-ending injury. Clay Matthews is trying to figure out, is he an inside guy? Is he an outside guy? Running all over the field, catching Forte from behind. You know, I really think that the secondary is an interesting mix, because we're having to run so much dime and nickel packages that you don't really get the true base seven out there to see what the cornerbacks are really all about on like one-on-one coverage. And I think that's where we're going to be sore, is that one-on-one coverage, because Hayward hasn't really been as bright of a shining moment as he was last year in these first couple of contests. But we have Demaryius Randall, who, if he plays on the outside, then Hayward gets to play in the slot. And if that happens, Hayward was mentioned by Pro Football Focus that he was the best slot coverage secondary player. So I would prefer to see maybe Randall on the outside. But again, Randall going up against your receivers, especially in your young guy there, you know, he was on fire when those returns. And if he gets the ball as a wide receiver, he could do some damage if he gets, you know, yards after the catch.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about Tyler Lockett. Now, you guys have your own tie on special teams, and he's actually a guy from Stanford that the Seahawks, I know going into the draft that a lot of Seahawks fans are really high on Ty Montgomery. Talk a little bit about him and what you've seen from him on special teams.
Yeah, the key with him is the size. I mean, just the sure size. I was looking at something today that the Packers are actually one of the heavier teams in the league this year. We must have been eating a lot of Campbell's Chunky Soup or something. I don't know. But when you look at Ty coming down the field, he looks like a tight end. You know, he doesn't look like a wide receiver at all. And Jeff Janis right there with him, you know, he's about that same stature, that same size. So you can say we have almost two mini Megatrons of our own. And so to get that speed plus that size running those kicks back, I mean, it's a big improvement. Like last year we were, I want to say 19 yards on average on those returns. And after last week, we're already up in the 35-yard range with Ty returning those three balls. So I expect really big things from Ty on those kick returns. The question becomes is, does he continue to do that also on punts? Or does Micah Hyde keep that job? Mm-hmm. Because I think Micah Hyde's going to be needed more to help out in that secondary situation, especially if Morgan Burnett doesn't come back this week.
So you brought up the Packers slot corner. I want to talk about our newest slot corner, Troy. Richard Sherman. Seahawks experimented with Sherman in the slot against the Rams last Sunday. Do you think that's any coincidence that Randall Cobb, kind of the best wide receiver on the Packers now, any coincidence since he plays the slot primarily?
You know, I can honestly tell you that after watching the Bears game, that they were favoring Randall Cobb a little bit with his shoulder still. They weren't throwing to him in the same kind of manner that Rodgers had thrown in the past. And I think that it doesn't really matter where Sherman plays because literally this season, Rodgers is going to spread the ball around more than he probably ever has because you have Richard Rodgers at the tight end position. He's a second-year player. He's really had a great camp, great OTAs. So look for him to be a factor there, of course, over the middle or even streaking down the field from a tight end perspective. And then you have Surehand James Jones back in the mix. He technically had 4 touchdowns in that Bears game, yeah, which would have tied his best single game catching record ever. And, you know, take away the one that he got taken away from the penalty and then take the one he got taken away because of the pass interference call, because he would have caught that ball had it not been pass interference. So, you know, James Jones catching it. You still got Davante Adams. He is poised to have a breakout year. So I think he's going to spread that ball around. The question becomes is how much is Lacy going to catch the ball out of the backfield? Because when you have people the size of Richard Rodgers, Ty Montgomery, Jeff Janis, you're talking screenplays all day. And Lacy could run for 10, 15, 20 on a screen without a problem. Mm-hmm. So I'm not too worried about Sherman playing in the slot at all, because I think if he's there, we'll just exploit somewhere else.
And it sounds like you know that really has been a weakness for the Seahawks, kind of going back and looking at the games where teams have attacked the Seahawks. It's really been through the screen game. Why do you think that they necessarily haven't taken that approach when you look back at some of the other games between the Seahawks and Packers?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I just think it might be, you know, partly, especially in that championship, Aaron is one of these guys, you know, he played under Brett Favre for a while. You could see a little bit of Brett in him, especially during that Chicago game. Just that first game jitters, nerves, throwing the ball high, you know, that creative flip pass out to Lacy that's probably on the cover of every magazine this week. These higher amped up games, Rodgers gets a little amped up himself. And it takes him a little while to calm down. Now, the big change for us this year is that McCarthy's not calling the plays. Mm. So it could have been that McCarthy wasn't a screen fan, and now we are going to see more screens because McCarthy's not calling the plays. So I'm hoping for a bunch of screens, because when you got people of that size and that caliber, there's no reason why you shouldn't take advantage of it, especially when you have a runner like Lacy.
I know McCarthy was criticized pretty heavily after that championship game. Is that why the play calling, did it get taken away or did he give it up?
I'm sure he gave it up. You know, it's weird to say, hey, you should shift this down to somebody. You know, I don't actually know how the football, you know, top office would work. Like, who would be the boss man to tell him to do that? Is right. that Ted Thompson? Is that, Mark Murphy? Who knows? But at the end of the day, I think that people have complained about the Packers defense enough that I think it was time as a head coach that not only do I have to take care of the office, which is in pretty good shape, but I do have to take care of the defense as well. So I think this was the year where, you know what, my entire offense is coming back. I know that Aaron Rodgers can control the game without a problem. Heck, Aaron could call the plays himself probably at this point. So I really do need to spend some more time with the defense. And I think that's why he gave up the playbook, was to, you know, let somebody else have a chance to shine. You know, see what they could do, potentially get picked up, get a job somewhere else, maybe be McCarthy's successor. You know, all kinds of factors could go into why the plays were given up from McCarthy to somebody else. I'm going to vote on like succession plan, because it'll be interesting to see how long McCarthy does stick around. I mean, he's been there for quite some time now.
You know, I got to say, Troy, it's really hard for me to dislike the Packers, especially when you guys have guys like offensive lineman Josh Sitton saying that Michael Bennett is underpaid and that if he'd like to hold out, he should do it now. Of course, Sitton is set to match up with Bennett on Sunday. Talk about some of those characters you guys have on, especially on the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at that front five, it's a group of people that have been together for quite some time now. Between Bulaga, between Sitton, you got the center that came into his own. These guys know Aaron, they know each other. It is a tight-knit family, and I think that's one of the key things when you look at the Packers offense and what they're able to do, it's because those front five guys know it inside and out. So when you get news like we got this morning, that Bulaga actually came out of practice. It looked like he tweaked his knee or something, didn't come back into practice. He was getting attended to on the sidelines. You know, it makes us nervous as Packer fans when you have someone like Bulaga go down and now you have to try to rotate in one of these new guys into the family. You know how it is when parents are divorced or whatever, or adoption, you know, foster kids, whenever new family members come in, there's always tension and there's always struggle and there's always trying to figure each other out and all that jazz. So whenever one of those five goes down, it's a scary situation for sure.
Are there any concerns then going into this game, how the offensive line is going to handle that Seahawks defensive line?
That's the biggest thing I think we have to worry about right now. I don't think I'm too concerned about it if all five of the normal guys start, right? That's the key. If they start, they're together. They know their assignments. I think they can keep the defensive line at bay. I think where it'll be a challenge for you guys is if the defensive line does say blitz or does get through the hole or whatever, Aaron looks like he's moving really, really well this year. So if he can step up, avoid the sack, and then literally do those flip tosses to Lacy or a short check down to Rodgers, you know, you guys will still be full steamrolling the other way. And then you have this wide open field for 20, 25, 30 yards. You know, I think that's where it'll be really interesting to see how much blitzing is there versus just pure good pass rushing.
So how are you feeling overall about this game? I know the Seahawks record at Lambeau isn't great, but this is really going to be the first trip by the team led by Carroll into Green Bay. I know you look back into history to kind of feel good about this game, but can you really do that?
Yeah, no, because, I mean, you have to go back to 09 for the last trip that the Seahawks came up to Lambeau. And I think that was something like a 40-point win contest for Green Bay
right,
at a time where they were coming into their potential, you know, their what we call the run, right? Four NFC North Division Championships, a Super Bowl win prior to that. I mean, they were literally just coming into the peak there in 09 and 10. So it's about that same kind of team this year. It was a young team in 09. It's the second youngest team in the league this year. I really think that we're poised for a victory. I think we earned a victory, even though we goofed it up in the end in that NFC title game. But it's going to be a tough contest still. I mean, you have, you know, especially you got Wilson coming home, you know, former Badger.
Sure.
He's coming back into Wisconsin. Does that play into it at all? Is he going to have jitters? Is he going to feel like he has to, you know, perform for the home crowd or what have you? So that could get into his mind a little bit. I think it's still going to be close. I think they were talking about a 3.5-point spread at last time I checked. I said 24-21 on our show on the Packers fan podcast. It could be, you know, anywhere between 27-20 points in that range, right? Mid to low 20s, I think, for both sides. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes OT just for the fact that it can, and it'll be fun to, like, say, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, no, we did the OT thing last week. I think we want to win straight up in the first 60 minutes instead this week.
I hear Brandon Bosick's available. He can come join your team and help you out.
Any chance the Packers can re-sign that special teams ace just for this game?
No, thank you.
No, you guys don't want him back? Well, that's too bad. Because we could use Golden Tate. Maybe we could borrow him from the Lions and throw up a last-second touchdown to win the game.
You know, at the same time, though, he didn't look all that great. You know, I mean, you figure Megatron barely caught the ball, so Golden Tate should have been getting all the action, and Golden Tate wasn't as good either.
Yeah.
I mean, they did what they did, but, you know, I don't know. The NFC North is fickle. That's all I can say. I mean, you guys have a pretty normal tradition out there in the West. I mean, it's usually you guys in San Francisco. I know they're kind of falling off a little bit. Maybe Jeff Fisher's finally figured some stuff out there in St. Louis with Foles coming into the mix. You know, Cards are always up there. So it'll be really interesting to see. But this year, the NFC North, the Vikings looked really good in the preseason. And then you're like, oh, yeah, preseason. And then Terry Bridgewater looks like a hot mess.
That was about the worst first half of football I think I've ever seen against the 49ers.
I watched the high school the other night, and I was like, the high school was better.
Yeah. Oh,
it
man.
It was terrible.
Well, it kind of brings me to the point of just that we've seen week one now. And we all like to make a lot of guesses based off of what we see in week one. And when I look at the Packers, the running game by the Bears against that Packers defense, it was brutal. How are they going to be able to fix what we saw against the Bears, because you know Marshawn Lynch coming in. That and that's the when I look back, Troy, at that NFC Championship game, Marshawn Lynch did not get the ball hardly at all in that first half. I think he touched the ball maybe once in the first quarter, and then they started to get him involved in the second quarter. But when you, I have to think that the Seahawks are going to take a different approach and actually run the ball against the Packers defense this game.
Yeah, when you look at 189 yards given up to the Bears last week, 400 yards in total offense for Jay Cutler's crew. I mean, those are sad numbers. But at the same time, we got a W. So the question becomes, is this the defense of the 15-1 Packers season where literally we could just score all day long and we just have to stay ahead of the game?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a defense that when you look at the Bears contest, I mean, four red zone trips, four field goals. Granted, one was a touchdown because of the offsides penalty. But yeah, at the end of the day, it was a bend, don't break mentality. And I think even if Marshawn were to run all day and rack up, say, 200, 250 yards on us, the question is he running into the end zone? And if he's not running into the end zone and we're just doing field goals all day, then the Packers clearly will have a chance because, you know, AR-12 will get it down there.
And the other thing I saw, I saw the Bears go to tight end quite a bit. Martellus Bennett, Michael Bennett's brother, playing for the Bears. Now, one guy we didn't have last year, Jimmy Graham. How do you guys generally stack up against tight end play?
Yeah, tight end play is one thing that I think is scary the most for me, because even the last two seasons, there's been this giant gap in the middle of the field. I don't know if that's because the safeties are playing farther back, if it's because Clay's been playing in the middle and he's trying to get the pass rush because that's what he's used to. But there seems to be this giant void where it'd be a perfect place for Marshawn Lynch to dump out and get a dump off pass and then have space, or for Jimmy to come across, grab a ball and drag it across the slot and then being able to do something there in the post. I think, you know, it could be a really big game for Jimmy. The question again is it going to be big between the 40s or is it going to be big at the goal line?
Yeah, and with the Seahawks continuing to have problems inside the red zone, we saw that in the NFC Championship game last year, and then we saw it again this week against the Rams. That's going to be something to watch. So I really want to thank you, Troy, for coming on the show. And for anyone who wants to check out your show or has Packers friends that wants to find a good Packers podcast, where do they find you?
Yeah, the best place to go, PackersFanPodcast.com. We have the episodes are out there. We got some analysis as well. Of course, you can support us on Patreon at PackersFanPodcast.com/support. Of course, follow us on Twitter at PackersFanPod. Otherwise, Facebook.com/PackersFanPodcast, I believe it is. Otherwise, just go over to the PackersFanPodcast.com site and you can get all the social links over there as well.
Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Troy. And we will look forward to Sunday night. And go Hawks!
Go Pack, go!
So thanks to Troy for coming on the show, and coming up next, we're going to get into our Do Better and Better at Life and read a few of your email.
Yeah, nice. And we did have a few emails. Be sure to email in, folks. It's what's the email address again?
GoHawks@SeahawkersPodcast.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at SeahawkersPod on Twitter, and Facebook.com/SeahawkersPodcast.
You can call into the show, too.
253-235-9041.
Leave a message. We'll play it on the show. Did we have one?
I'll have to check.
Okay. All right. Because I thought maybe we had one, but I really enjoy it when people call in and leave the messages. And I think he might have. And if he did, it was one of those things like he started to record one, like hung up because it just wasn't going right. And then he came, called in, just redid it. You can have as many takes at it as you want. You don't have to be awesome right out of the gate.
Yeah. We won't play all of them. We'll just play the good one.
Yeah. Exactly. So don't be afraid.
We'll go ahead and check that out and come back after the break with Do Better and Better at Life. The Seahawkers Podcast is the official podcast of the official booster club of the Seattle Seahawks. And we're getting into our second half of the show. What do you say we check out some? We checked out the voicemails during the break, and DCH called in. It was over a week old, so we won't play that. We'll make DCH call back in and see how if he still feels the same way about not being worried about Cam Chancellor or not. see if his opinions change. So, yeah, this is a shout out to you, DCH, to make that happen.
Yeah, I think he had called in like right after we recorded the last show.
I think that's what happened. Sometimes the timing's not great. If you want to make sure that you get your call in on Monday.
Yeah, Monday is a good day to do it.
Monday's a good day to call in. But we do have some email, and we'll start off with Jameson from Murray, Utah. Says, hi, Brandon and Adam. Jameson here from Jared's black hole that is the great state of Utah.
That's awesome.
Thanks for the shout out on podcast number 82. I had an inquiry regarding how you two chaps watch the Hawks during the regular season when, like myself, you fine gentlemen are considered to be outside the viewership region. Mm. I currently have cable with a sports package, but as you probably know all too well, it is slim pickings to watch all the Hawks games all season when you live out of market. I know there's some options to resolve my state of woe, but would rather not hash out a lot of hard-earned dough for elaborate streaming services or satellite subscriptions if I don't have to. How do you get around this while being kind to your wallet to maximize the frequency of keep getting them checks? Go Hawks.
Absolutely, man. Because once you get them checks, you got to keep that check in your pocket too, man. Like, you can't be shelling it out. And that DirecTV nonsense, holy smokes. I actually worked for DirecTV for a short period of time years and years and years ago. And holy cow, that the whole Sunday ticket, that's the one thing that keeps that entire organization afloat. And that's why it is what it is cost-wise. Now, being a cheap SOB like myself, I have found a way around this. Now, the site that I watch the games on, look, do it at your own risk. Let me put it that way, okay? Because it's not like you're doing anything illegal. It's just, there's a quadrillion pop-ups that come up as you try to get the stream to go. Sometimes you have to refresh the stream. I don't know how many of them. I do it all on a Mac, so I don't worry too much about the virus thing. If you're on a PC, I don't know if it's something that you need to be more worried about. But anyways, it's called First Row Sports. If you just Google that, I think it's the actual address is firstrowsports.me or something like that. And you can get all the games, and you get all sorts of different sports on there as well. Now, the resolution isn't the greatest. I mean, it's not the world's greatest stream, but you do get the game, you do get it live, and you can watch it. And so that's one way that I'm able to get around it, and it's free. So that's something I do. Again, do it at your own risk, man. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's stuff on there that gets on there, and it, you know, takes all of your credit card information, any naked pictures that you have of yourself on there, like sends them out. I don't know, but just be careful.
Is it worth the risk? Now, I'll give you a couple options that I think might be a little safer. One would be if you have a good friend in the viewership region, in the in-market region. And I will say, Montana is actually generally, we do pretty well for generally, getting them in-market on the west side of Montana. So, but if you're outside of that area and you have a friend who has a sling box that can hook it up to their TV, and so you can kind of watch it off of their TV at the same time they're watching it live, that's another good live option. If, you know, outside of DirecTV through the other paid services, there's not very many live options. But, you know, the NFL Game Pass is a pretty good option this year. They've made it so now, I think it's $99 for the entire year. You don't just get the Seahawks games after they air. You get all of the NFL games, so you can watch those. And you get the access to the audio stream, too. You do get to listen to the live audio stream with Steve Rabel and Warren Moon live. So that might be a good way to go, because then you get those guys live, and really, and if you can watch the game afterward, I think listening to those guys is just fine for as far as options go. If you want to avoid, you know, having your computer go down with viruses.
Right. Well, yeah, that's true. It's always better to watch than to just listen.
Oh,
you
sure.
Know?
Yeah. I'm just saying, I've
those are options.
There have been weeks where, you know, not having DirecTV and the game not on on one of the regular networks, that I'll tune in to the Rabel Moon coverage on the radio.
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely better than a poking at the sharp stick. No doubt about that.
Got another email from Jolly in Port Townsend. Says, nice. Adam is wrong with his conspiracy theory about the onside kick. If they were attempting an onside kick, they would have kicked it into the ground so the Rams couldn't call for a fair catch.
I love that he brought up this point, by the way.
A fair catch signal makes it pretty easy to receive the ball and would make the onside kick pretty useless.
Yeah. So what did Steven Hauschka say when he came out after the game?
He just said he meant to kick it farther.
No, that's not what he said.
Okay, what did he say exactly?
He said that he miskicked it.
Yeah.
That's all he said. He didn't say that he meant to kick it farther. He said he miskicked it. He miskicked the onside kick. That's what he miskicked.
I know. I think he also
said that. No, I'm telling you, man. And I'm not the only one, though. There were people at the bar last night. This is unsolicited, and we were talking about that play. And three or four other people, Chiefs fans, a couple other people, they were like, dude, why did you guys kick it onside there? And I was like, well, what do you think? Do you think they were trying to kick it downfield and miss it, or they miskicked an onside kick? And they're like, oh, that was clearly an onside kick gone awry. It's clear. Just watch it, man. How can I be wrong when the tape don't lie?
Here's what I think. Here's what I think what I think you're seeing, Adam, is that I think he lined up to make it look like they could be attempting an onside kick.
See, that sounds more BS than a conspiracy theory.
To give it that kind of look so that the guys on the front line would come up, and then he could kick it over their heads and hopefully... Because they said there was a tackle down there that they wanted to get it into his hands recover a turnover.
Yeah, No, they hopefully were going to try to recover a turnover. It was going to be off of an onside kick that Hauschka miskicked.
So here's what he said, Adam. The result wasn't planned there. I mishit the kick, which is what you heard. And then immediately after, he says, we were supposed to kick it downfield farther, but I mishit it.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. Sorry, guys.
There you go.
Lies, lies, lies.
Well,
and I'm not wrong.
I like how you preface it with, or you tag it with, you're not wrong. But I think you are.
Well, I just want to make sure everybody knows. Like, yeah, just so you know, I'm not wrong. Still right.
All right, then. Well, what do you say we move on to do better and better at life?
Mm. All right, man. How you feeling about your do better? Do you want me to go first? Or
why don't you do better, Adam?
All right. Well, my do better this week. For those of you that listen to the pod, you knew that I was in Pennsylvania this last week, and a little south of Pittsburgh in a little town called Uniontown. A lovely little town. It was a good time there. But my problem with the state of Pennsylvania is the way they sell beer. What is wrong with you people? I can't understand this for the life of me. So here's the law. You have to go to a beer distributor to buy beer. So it was time for the Monday night game. I get done at the sawmill. It's been a long day. All I want is one tally to take back to the hotel room to watch the game. A 24-ounce, whatever. I don't even care what it was. I just wanted one tall beer. That's it. Like, I don't. That shouldn't be that hard to find, you would think. Can't find anything in a gas station. That's for dang sure. So can't find it in the grocery store. That's for dang sure.
Wow.
So then I'm like, all right. So Dad says, oh, I saw a sign over, you know, back down the road here where you can get beer. I was like, oh, okay, fine. Let's turn around and we'll walk in there. So I walk in, and you can't buy just a tally. You can't even buy just a six pack. You have to buy a full case of beer if you're going to buy beer.
What?
So I don't understand this law at all. So if the idea is to try to keep beer from being out there and so readily available that it's easy for people to just, you know, drink all the time and be raging alcoholics, then you make it so that you have to buy 12 beers at a time when you buy the beer? That makes no sense to me. How is beer so hard to come by in the state of Pennsylvania? Here in Montana, you walk up to any store you want, as long as it's not between 2 a.m. and 8 a.m., and you can buy whatever you want in almost any quantity, however you want to get it. Like you know, freedom ought to work. So this idea, the whole beer system in Pennsylvania is screwed up, and the legislature there needs to do better.
Free the beer.
Free the beer.
Hashtag free the beer.
I ended up leaving like 6 beers in the hotel fridge. Like, I just didn't want that much beer.
Right.
Like, why did I have to buy 12 stinking beers?
See, you end up giving it to, then, you know, probably whoever cleans the room, they're probably under 21, and they're going to give it to their friends and see you just contributed to the delinquency of minors.
Hey, look, I look at that as paying it forward, because when I was in high school, I worked at Hertz Rent-A-Car at the airport, and we were the wash bay boys. We'd wash the cars when you bring them back, return them for the rentals, right? Uh-huh. Bless the heart of every person that left a bottle or a six-pack of beer or something like that in the back of the car. We had some good times out there in the wash bay. I'm not going to lie.
All right, Adam. Well, my do better this week is for the San Francisco 49ers, our rival to the South.
Oh.
Now, there might be lots of reasons that you can think of for the 49ers to do better.
Jim Tomsula's facial expressions during the game?
I don't know. Those are pretty priceless.
Okay.
If I could see that week to week, I think I'd be okay with that.
I think we might.
the problem I have with it is it's a policy issue with Jim Tomsula and the San Francisco 49ers. It's interesting to me to go down the list and look at who are the team captains of each of the NFL teams. You know, for example, Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers, as you might think, Randall Cobb is one, and then Clay Matthews on defense, and then they actually appoint a special teams captain every week, which is that's kind of cool. Maybe based on how well you play, you can get to be the special teams captain. And of course, the Seahawks, you have one for each. You have Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, and John Ryan.
Right.
As I go down the list, though, there's one thing that jumps out at me with the San Francisco 49ers. They have 4 captains on offense, 4 captains on defense, and 1 captain on special teams. They have 9 captains on their team, Adam. By far more than any other team in the NFL, they have 9 captains on that San Francisco 49ers team. Are these just the guys that were left over? They have 2 years with the 49ers, so they automatically get appointed as a captainship with this team. 9 captains, Adam.
That's way too many captains, man. There's one thing I know from floating the river on a float trip, or you know, things of that nature. There's one captain, for the case of these other teams, it's one for offense, one for defense, and one for special teams, right? There's captain.
Some teams have 2. Some teams have 2 for offense, 2 for special teams.
Okay, fine, but they basically things get dysfunctional if you get much past that. 4. Like, who's following? That's what I want to know.
That's what I don't get. Look, there's 53 guys on the roster.
They get a participation trophy?
Yeah, I don't know why. Now, I guess maybe if you're going for kind of the play on the Niners, so you get 9 captains for the Niners. But why not just go to 49 captains if that's the case, and give those other 4 guys on the 53-man roster something to play for? That right. if they're not on the roster captains list of the 49 players, then they have some work to do.
I know one thing for a fact, Brandon. And that is, if any of these people that were a captain for the 49ers, any of these 9, James Harrison would make them give their captainship back, because it's basically just a participation trophy.
It's basically a joke show. And James Harrison would agree with me that the 49ers, the San Francisco 49ers, with all of your captains, you need to do better.
I agree, man. Well, they need to do better in a lot of ways. And we'll talk more about the Niners in the pick show. I think we're going to try to record that later in the day if the pod gods allow us to get one of these done.
We can only hope.
Just a little kick behind the scenes. As we started to try to get into our better at life and do betters and everything, after all the technical issues we'd been having the night before, caused us to go to the next day to record, power goes out of Brandon's house.
Right.
Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. This has been a rough go.
A rough go indeed. But on to better times, on to better at life.
Right. All right, well, my better at life this week is simple, short, and sweet, and it's for a player on the Tennessee Titans, and that is Super Marcus Mariota, mainly because he made me look damn good, and I appreciate that. For all of you that listen to the pick show, you heard Jared and I get into it for the umpteenth time about Mariota versus Winston. He's a Winston guy. I think Winston stinks. I don't think he's going to be a productive player over the course of his career. I'm big on Mariota. I think he has a high upside, and... Well, I don't know, just to prove it, he went out and chucked 4 TDs in the first half and finished the game with a perfect passer rating, while Jameis Winston went out there and chucked a pick 6 on his first throw. Fantastic. This was the best thing that could have happened to me personally, and for that, Marcus Mariota, You are better at life than Skip Bayless.
You know, just if we need a reminder of why we have this segment, I want to let folks in on one of the things Skip Bayless said about Mama Lynch's comments this last week, and that he thought that Marshawn Lynch should be held accountable
wow.
for the statements of his mom with regard to the offensive coordinator being fired, with her wanting that. Now, if you're actually going to fine a player, I don't know what he means by holding him accountable, if it means fines or if it means suspensions, but that is ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I mean, if I had to be held responsible for some of the things that my dad says, and it's not like he says anything bad, it's just I wholeheartedly disagree, I'd be very upset about that. And vice versa. He doesn't need to be held responsible for any of the nonsense that comes out of my mouth either. You know what you should be held responsible for? The things that come out of your own mouth.
Right.
Those are the things, not what comes out of other. That sounds like something Skip would say.
Yeah. So I don't know who in Skip's life we need to hold accountable for what Skip says, but maybe that should happen. So my better at life this week is for, and this is something I found on Twitter, a letter of agreement, conditions of football viewing with Ken Gratt. And Ken Gratt,
oh, yeah.
he posted this for everybody to see. And this is a contract, basically. If you're going to watch games at Ken's house, this is what you have to agree to. And
right.
I can't read through all of it. You have to go find it out. But just to give you a little bit of an idea, pregame. All participants must show up 30 minutes prior to game time. Late arrivers will not be granted entry, as this will interfere with a viewing experience. No exceptions.
Wow.
Pre-game discussion should be limited to football talk only. Fantasy football prognostication is not only acceptable, but encouraged before the game only. So see, once the game starts, fantasy talk needs to stop.
Okay, I'm fine with that. I'm on board there.
And then you get into the rules of during the game. Casual conversation is allowed during commercial breaks only. This is your time to tell me about yourself and your interests. However, keep all personal stories short that they do not carry over into the game.
That's right. And that forces people to be succinct.
Yes.
I think that's fine. Yeah.
Talking during the game is football related. Examples include formations, mismatches, player personnel, and predictions of play calls. Excessive talking can result in immediate elevation to offense level three.
Wow.
And so, ooh. Yes. So
that's like DEFCON 3 or some nonsense, man. Like, that sounds bad.
Yeah, I'll get into that too. But then the rules get a little bit more specifically related to the Seahawks. At no time are you allowed to state that you think the Seahawks are going to win this game, ever. Even if the Seahawks are up by 30-plus at halftime, jinxing the Seahawks with your irresponsible prediction is considered a threat and will lead to your removal. All celebration needs to be deferred until Russell Wilson is in the victory formation.
Now, see, Brandon, that is something that should be directed directly to you. Because I don't know how many times you texted last year, when we're up, what was it, 18? Was that the magic number that we were always up, like 16 or 18? And you would text me, and then all of a sudden the lead would evaporate.
Yeah, no, I think it was, 16 or 18, something like that.
Yeah, no more doing that.
I would get to offense level category level 3 pretty quickly, I think, with this. So, And then conversely, never announce that you, quote, think the Seahawks are going to lose this one. This will result in permanent banishment.
Ooh, banishment. That's a powerful word.
And then there's a note to parents, just letting them be aware that they may be subject to bad sportsmanship by an adult, excessive profanity, childish behavior during tough times. It's just a good announcement. And my favorite, though, is the notes after the game, because this is very specific. When the Seahawks have won, we go into the backyard for a victory cigar. This is time for reflection on what we have just watched. All discussion should be about game-based observations and statistics. Turning your conversations towards next week's opponent is also allowed. If the Seahawks lost, in capital letters, bold and underlined, you should leave.
That's right, because then it's time for mourning.
Right. Taking a Seahawks loss lightly or gloating about another team's victory could result in bodily harm.
And, hey, that's fair. He said it out. He said it. It was warning up front. Like, you know that could cause physical damage to you.
And making ridiculous statements like, even though they lost, they played well, or can't win them all, is prohibited. We are angry after a loss and need to act that way.
Hey, look, man, you got to be able to let it go, though, too. You got to be able to let it go. You can't live with that anger bottled in, man.
Yeah, you
got Otherwise, you write a giant manifesto about how you watch a game.
But see, this is the reason, Adam, why we don't do post-game podcasts. This is why we wait until middle of the week, because that's when we can actually rationalize that. Because right after the game, there's no rational thinking.
Oh, no. It's probably a good thing that we don't do a pod directly after the game. Although we have discussed doing like maybe a 10-minute, 20-minute reaction pod right after games.
I don't know.
Tell us what you think, people, if you think that would be something you'd be interested in or not. I don't know. It could be just a lot of, oh, my God. Just that for 20 minutes.
Yeah. And that might not be as, I don't know. Something you want to listen to. Yeah. But going down the offense levels. First offense, a verbal warning of your violation. Offense level 2, second offense, removal from my house. Offense level 3, lifetime banishment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Goes right to the lifetime banishment.
Yeah. Not just a one-year banishment. Lifetime.
No. No. I mean, he makes Commissioner Goodell look like a softy, man.
So, Ken Gratt, for the great football rules of watching games in your house, better at life than Skip Bayless.
That was pretty entertaining. Now, the one thing I do have a tendency to do is when something goes really bad in a game is to chuck my hat. And I think that would fall under the childish behavior aspect of his policy. So I don't know.
That's just a warning to parents that their children will be subjected to that type of behavior by adults.
He's on my side on this.
It's
all
just
right.
For parents to recognize that, hey, if you're going to bring your kids to a game, this is what they're in for.
Right. So, one other thing, too, that I realized about why we lost last week.
Okay.
I didn't wear my lucky hat.
Oh.
Because I was in the mill. So I've got to figure out a way to wear the hat underneath the hard hat. And I've noticed that this must be a Pennsylvania thing, because a bunch of dudes in the mill would wear a baseball cap and then the hard hat on top of that.
Uh-huh.
It seems rather ridiculous to wear two hats. But if I'm going to be in the mill as many Sundays as I'm going to be in the mill over the next month and a half, I'm going to have to start wearing it in the mill. Like, there's no other way around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if it's an important road game.
Yeah. But fortunately, this week, I'm at home. It's a home game for me. So I will be sure to wear the appropriate gear. And if anybody else forgot to wear their appropriate gear week one, come on, man. Like, you got to get it on this week.
Yeah. Now, see, I usually like to put out a reminder to folks, but considering it was week one, I just didn't think that people would need to be reminded.
Well, apparently I did. So it's my fault, and I'm sorry. And that's why I can almost guarantee a victory week two. I'll be wearing the lucky hat.
There you go. There you go. Well, Adam, I think that about does it for this week's show.
Right on, man. Well, good talking to you, even though it had been a little bit of a difficulty getting it done. I think we powered through pretty well, man.
We powered through the technology issues. A lot easier to work through when you're actually in person, as it turns out. But
yeah,
it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Especially when you're technologically challenged as I am. Like, it doesn't make it good on my end. I got to have Brandon. Brandon's like my tech support in, like, say, India or something like that, you know?
That's why they make the manuals for a lot of this technical equipment, Adam.
That's true.
You know, thanks for making me read one today.
You're more than welcome. I'm sure that was great reading. And especially when it turned out to be just a dumb thing on my end. So, right on, man. Well, cool. Well, let's wrap this beast up. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.